And bring ourself into presence with three deep and mindful breaths. And a deep in breath. About the yoga of renunciation from the Bhagavad Gita, the song of the Lord, the words of the Lord, the song of the Lord. We're going to look at a topic Reverend Ross touched on today, which is our inventory of knots. How do we look at the inventory of knots? And from what perspective do we look at the inventory of knots? How do we get in touch with them? How do we go about that? I thought it would be useful to bring to mind a particular blessing that we do in Unity, which is, and you can do it with me if you want, I behold the Christ in you. Bless you, I behold the Christ in you. Now let's do the same thing but to ourselves. I love you and bless you, I behold the Christ in you or me. I behold the Christ in me. Can we do that? Can we behold the Christ in ourselves? I find that when I behold the Christ in others, it seems natural and somehow I can see it. And when I choose to behold the Christ in me, it's a different experience for me. Behold the Christ in me. I'm not used to doing that. I behold the Christ in me. In the tradition of the Bhagavad Gita, the song of the Lord, what we call the Christ in me is called the capital S self. The capital S self. Different tradition, different words, same thing. How do we behold the capital S self within us, or the Christ in me? Maybe we could make a practice of beholding the Christ in me from time to time in the morning, perhaps, before or after a meditation practice. To get in touch with that Christ in me, the capital S self. The Bhagavad Gita is going to take a bit of a circuitous route to get there. And the talk I have prepared will last at least two sessions.
Oops.
So we'll get started today.
Okay.
So this is a sloka from chapter 4, the Yoga of Renunciation. This is sloka number 14. And this is the song of the Lord. So the Lord is speaking. And in this tradition, Krishna is the embodiment of the Lord. As in our tradition, Christ was the embodiment of the Lord. Krishna says, I am unaffected by all actions, nor do I desire any results. How does that relate to our idea of God? I am unaffected by all actions, nor do I desire any results. Whoever experiences this quality in me is also free. Whoever experiences this godlike quality is free. as we envision the Lord being free. Well, Sam. We're just beginning. We're going to be talking about the knots today that Rev. Ross talked about. Different perspective. So here's our first sloka. Lord Krishna, I'm unaffected by actions, nor do I desire any results. Whoever experiences this quality in me, and we know that the Lord resides in us as well, that's part of our belief. Whoever experiences this quality is also free. Let's go on to the next one. 15. Even the ancients who realized this freedom from all duties nonetheless continued to work in the world. So the Christ in me, or the capital S self in me, is free of duties. There's nothing that Christ in me needs to do. Of course, we need to do things, but the Christ in me doesn't need to do anything. It just is. The ancients realized this freedom from all duties. Nonetheless, of course, they continued to work in the world. Like those sages, you too should continue to act, even though that divine essence is free of action. Even the sages are sometimes confused about action and inaction. You may have heard about the principle of inaction in the Buddhist tradition, or in some of the teachings of Lao Tse in the Tao Te Ching. And there's some confusion about this. Some people superficially think that if you understand the principle of inaction, it means you don't do anything. And it's why those peoples in those other countries are poorer than we and haven't made progress like we have, because they're inactive. As opposed to us, who believe in action and we do things, and that's why we're better off, and we have satisfied our American dream, which is to acquire things and be happy. Be happy. It's a way of looking at the world. And even the sages are sometimes confused about action and inaction. However, I'll tell you now what action is, and you'll be freed from evil. So the teachings are to learn what action is. And Rev. Russ talked about this today, didn't he, in the knots, remember? Mm-hmm. Gave us some homework on how to deal with our knots. I'm not this, I can't do that. So those are actions that we may choose not to do. Not to do. So now the scriptures are going to tell us what action is, and when we learn what action really is, that will free us from the burden of evil thoughts in our minds, which is where evil resides. With this assurance that we're going to be freed from evil, learning about action, the Lord goes to the next. Shouldn't be slogan, it should be sloka. My spell checker didn't write sloka. I put slogan in there.
I was going to say that sounds very Western.
Sloka. A sloka is just a verse. It's a verse. 17. Distinguish between right action, wrong action, and inaction. This is our challenge, to distinguish between right action, wrong action, and inaction. The way of karma is nearly impossible to understand. Karma is what we do. What we do. Is it a right action? What we're doing? Is it a wrong action? Can we distinguish between that and inaction? Mm-hmm. And the scriptures say that this is tough territory. Nearly impossible to understand this. It's important to discriminate between appropriate action, forbidden action, and inaction, and how this applies to our list of knots. Mm-hmm. What's appropriate, what's forbidden, and what's inaction? Note the three: right action, wrong action, and the actionless state. So Russ looked at it from the viewpoint of, I have these knots, I can't, those limitations. The Gita is looking at it from the point of view is what's right for me to do, what's not right for me to do, and the actionless state, choosing to do nothing. Krishna here is speaking of what is to be done, what is not to be done, and what is doing nothing. What should we do? What should we not do? What's doing nothing? And this is explained in the next sloka. And of course, we're not going to get the next sloka because it's going to take two classes to go over the contents of the next sloka.
It's not fair. I'm going to be in Colorado next week, so forget it.
We'll push ahead as far as we can. The next sloka. What is to be done? What's not to be done? Should I go to Colorado? Shouldn't I go to Colorado? Should I sell the house? Shouldn't I sell the
house? Not a choice.
What's the right action? What's the wrong action? Should I just choose inaction and don't do anything for a while?
Does it help us to understand when we say to ourselves, I have no choice? I remember Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. There is a space between the reaction and response.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a breath we can take, and in that breath, we can ask ourselves, What is my needs?
We can choose what is to be done, what is not to be done, or doing nothing.
So further explain more thoroughly to understand ourselves, perhaps we could ask that question, what am I feeling, what am I needing, that would meet if I take this action of going to, let's say, Colorado.
This probably goes deeper than feelings and needs. Feelings and needs reside in the mind.
Sure.
We have a mind and we have a body. Feelings and needs are thoughts we have in the body. Some thoughts lead us to needs, wishes, and so on. Some of these thoughts bring about, because our minds are hooked up to all different parts of our body, emotions, so on. Our tears cry if we're sad, and our fists clench if we're angry, from thoughts. So emotions and the mind are tightly hooked. What we're going to look at today is going into another realm and has something to do with that Christ consciousness we talked about earlier, that capital S self. It doesn't hurt to examine things between, with a pause, between we have an idea to do something and then we do whatever reaction comes up for us. That's mindless performance, action without discernment. Viktor Frankl says there's a pause between every desire and reaction. Mm-hmm. And in that reaction, we can choose discernment. Mm-hmm. The discernment is what is to be done, what's not to be done, and what is doing nothing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's look at how the Gita looks at this. Thank you, Sam. The person is wise who sees the inactions, and the action in inaction. This is purposely presented in a confusing manner as a paradox. Who sees the inaction in actions, and who sees the action in inaction.
Yeah, it reminds me of when I want to correct someone, there's no need to be corrected. I'm doing that for my mind or my ego. You know what I mean? So now I realize
sure.
that.
I'll tell you where this is leading so we can see the path we're going to follow down here. The person is wise who sees the inaction in actions and the action in inaction. Generally, our actions spring from reaction, as Sam pointed out. Reaction. That's very useful. If we had to think about every single thing we did from moment to moment, you know, should I put on my earrings, should I get dressed, and what should I wear, and what's for breakfast, and how to start the car. And so the preponderance of our reactions are useful. We've built them up to support living a full life without having to cogitate on every single thing. But there are some things where our reactive nature doesn't support us. So to be able to discern those, find the pause between the desire or the wish and the reaction. I desire to speed up and pass that guy on the beltway because I want to, and my reaction is to push on the accelerator. Well, there's a space between those two. And if this is an opportunity where we somehow get this sense that our reaction is not serving us, we can choose discernment to find a different way of choosing what to do. Our actions are part of our body, brain, mind, nexus. That's where our actions spring from, generally.
Ego.
Pardon?
Ego.
That's where our actions, and that works 95-99% of the time. But some times, we need to access another intelligence. We have two intelligences with us. And that other intelligence we call the Christ consciousness. In the Gita, it's called the capital S self. We've already been told the capital S self and the Christ consciousness doesn't act. We've been given the clue. So that's where the inaction resides, isn't it? Does the divine in you do anything? Not really. You're doing it through your thoughts and your body. Sometimes it's appropriate to call on that divine essence, capital S, Christ consciousness, whatever you call it. However you're able to do that.
I find I've had that experience where it's I have the impulse to jump in. You know, that's very reactive. You know, sort of knee-jerk response. And I've learned now when I feel that to step back and that pause.
Yes.
And I don't quite think of it as self or Christ consciousness. For me, it's sort of spirit.
Spirit.
That's the other name.
Good.
And I found that it's like I'm not consciously doing anything at that point. I've stepped back. And for me, the feeling is more of allowing it to unfold.
Yes.
And without me meddling. Like,
yes.
Peel my hands off. Get my hands off. And allow it to unfold. See what happens.
Yes.
I might step in at another point. I might not do anything. But for me, the lesson has been how much better it is when I keep out of it.
Yes.
Well,
you don't need to come next week because the rest of today and next week is aiming towards that very concept. So we've given names to things.
Yeah.
Capitalist self, Christ consciousness.
Spirit.
If you want to call it spirit, that works better for you. I sometimes call it just an empty space in me that's full. Mm. Calling on the empty space that's not my reactive nature. Mm-hmm. There's some emptiness in me, and yet it's full. Mm. And somehow, without thinking about it, allowing what comes up from that space to guide me and follow that guidance. I have a little rule for myself, which I don't recommend, but I use it. And the rule goes something like this. One of those situations where I found my reactions aren't serving me 100% from past experience, oftentimes a thought will just arise from nowhere. And my rule for myself is, if that thought rises up, I have to do that. I'm not allowed to argue with it back in my mind, which has a lot of reasons for sticking with my reactive behavior and so on. No, I just have to let go and do that. This occurs often for me personally on my morning walks. On my morning walks, I have a place where I do a little exercise during my walk. And I wouldn't call it painful, but it's a little painful. It's a stretch. So my reactive part doesn't want to experience anything uncomfortable whatsoever. It just rather, what's the point? It just rather pass by and enjoy the day and experience that. Although I know that if I do that particular stretch, I feel so great afterwards. And although there's an uncomfortable, approaching pain feeling doing it, I know I can get through it, and I know it works out great. So I've learned not to think about it as I approach that point where I do or don't do this exercise. Rather, I've learned to say, okay, space, spirit, you direct me as I'm walking up there, and I'll follow whatever guidance there is. Sure enough, the guidance will draw my feet over to do that exercise, or will draw my feet to pass it, and I'm perfectly at ease. I know that the spirit or the space of inaction within me has given me the guidance. So if it comes up for me, I just do it. That make sense?
Yeah. I think for me it's, and I think you're saying the same thing, is you've learned to trust that, and that's what I feel. I feel like I've learned to trust that process.
Trust your inner intelligence.
Yeah, and it's an intelligence that I am consciously not aware of working, and I'm not having anything to do with it, but for some reason, it's there, and I'm learning slowly, very slowly, to listen to that voice, that prompting.
That inner intelligence.
And it's amazing to me when I look back at how much I ignored and how much trouble it caused.
Oh, yes. Oh, me too. I've got lots of examples where my mind figured it out. Let's see, should I do this? Here's the pluses. Here's the minuses.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And I never looked at it. I didn't know I had an inner intelligence. And later on, I looked back at my decision process and said, my goodness. You're looking at the wrong things there.
Yeah.
All right, so the person is wise, like yourself, who sees inaction, that spirit aspect of yourself in actions, and the action and inaction bringing forth. That's where we're going. He or she or you are a yogi and accomplish everything. With this ability, you can accomplish everything. Well, let's head off into the commentary. Most people haven't had this realization. It's foreign. So let's head into the commentary and see how a master teacher guides us through the steps to come to the realization that you come to. 14 says, the one who sees inaction, inaction, and action, and inaction is a wise person, a yogi. having reached this point, you have accomplished everything. Everything, being able to rely on that inner wisdom. You've accomplished everything. You do, and at the same time, do not. You are about to do, and then some other intelligence came forth, and in a way, you're not doing because your normal doing mechanisms are resting now while you're letting your other intelligence guide you. You do not, and still you do. So you are doing things. And if someone from the outside looks at you, they say, oh, just a normal person. They're doing some things. They're not doing other things. They're doing some good things, in my opinion, and some bad things, in my opinion. And they're not doing anything at all sometimes, and I think they ought to do something. I think they ought to stand up and take action. This is an outrageous situation. And they're not doing that. They're inactive, in my view. Yet when we come from that inner intelligence, we are grounded and secure and can treat those others who see differently with respect, with a sense of generosity for where they're coming from, and some compassion for who they are, without having it disturb our groundedness. You sleep and sleep not. He's having fun with this. You sleep and sleep not. You eat, yet do not eat. So on and on. Two different things that look like opposites. From a mental perspective, these look like opposites. But the wise person knows the difference here. We discuss the difference. You see inaction amid all the actions. Here you are, grounded in that other intelligence that is your peace. Is your peace. Seeing actions going on all around you. Grounded in your peace, not disturbed by that. And perhaps you see in others as they are acting that Christ principle in them. So even though they are driven by their reactive nature, current political dramas, for example, even though others are driven by their reactive nature, you can see the inaction in that. You can look deeper at other persons involved in our political drama and see the spiritual essence that is within them. And differentiate that from their actions, which may be, to your discernment, reactive in nature. It's a way of looking at the world without letting the world disturb our peace, knowing that even those who have opinions that we oppose and who do actions that we oppose have the same spiritual consciousness that we have and may or may not be aware of it, even though we are, and may or may not have chosen to act from it. Yet, in our experience, if you've acted from your spiritual essence, know what a peace it brings you and can have some compassion for others who don't seem to be so much at peace, victims of their reactive nature. Have some compassion, have some respect for where they are in their spiritual path, maybe not moving too much, who knows.
How do you make peace with others who may not seem to be at the same consciousness when they're sort of trying to drag you down?
That's tough.
What a great question. How do you make peace with others who are not at your same consciousness? In addition, who seem to have it in for you personally and try to drag you down. The issue is that we do take things personally. We do. I do. Maybe someone who is more spiritually evolved than myself might not take things personally. I do take things personally. We can develop a spiritual practice, and here's the practice that I use, of having our reaction and our reactive nature, feeling that they do mean this to harm me, some harm for me, experiencing that that's what I'm feeling right now, and choosing in the space between getting that feeling of I don't like this, I'm pissed off, and doing something about it, my reactive nature, I'm going to say something harmful back. They said something nasty, I just thought of something more nasty to say. That's our reactive nature. They think
an all too common scenario.
They think they're good at insults, I'm better. So my reactive nature offers up a whole cornucopia of insults. And even if I don't do the insults in the moment, or if not appropriate, or I can't, circumstances aren't right, my mind will still perhaps go on afterwards thinking up this great menu of insults that I would have, could have, should have done. That's how our minds work. In your spiritual practice, I find that if I sleep on these things, sometimes my mind has a mind of its own and goes on and works on the insults. It sort of seems like fun. I know it's not good for me. But yet my mind is so consumed with it, it goes on with it. Most of the time, I can choose not to do anything, or even reveal this to others, or not discuss with others how I felt insulted and so on, because that's part of our reactive nature, to want to get confirmation that we're right and they're wrong. So to refrain, not only from doing anything, but from discussing it with others, which waters the seeds of discontent in us and does not contribute to the peace that we really are. Rather, to let the mind have its way in as much as we don't seem to be in charge, and sleep on it. And then perhaps the next morning, take a step back from our own minds. Can I step back from my own mind and take a look at it and see what's going on there? When we step back, usually we're drawing upon that other intelligence with us. Our mind has done its thing. It's gone through all the insults, all the shoulda, woulda, couldas. So, and in a way, we have to give the mind some space to do that. If we don't, we suppress it, it's just going to come back and do it anyway later. So, let it do its thing. Not interfere with it, but don't do anything. Sure. And then, perhaps the next morning, after a night's sleep, if we can get in touch with that other intelligence, take a breath and say, all right, Mrs. Mind or Mr. Mind, have you done everything that was yours to do? Thank you for sharing. Now let me look deep at that experience I had where I took it personally. Let me look deep. And see if this was really something I was meant to take personally. Or rather, that was just this other individual acting according to his nature. We all have a nature that we're born with, and it stays with us throughout our life, and we die with it. It's our nature. You can see, I can see this in my two girls. One was born with one nature, and one was born with another nature. Totally opposite. They don't get along very well. Their natures are so opposite. We're all born with different natures. Can we notice what our nature is, which gives us the ability to notice what that other person's nature is, who seemed not to harm me? And see perhaps if that person was just acting according to his nature and didn't really have it in for me personally. Maybe his reactive nature thought it needed to treat me personally, but not really. And we can look and see that was just a person acting according to his nature, allowing his reactive nature, or all my reactive natures to go. Then I can step back from my own mind and breathe through it and begin to treat that person with some respect for where they came from and where they are and how they got there. Some generosity. Maybe they're just doing the best they can. Maybe they found in the past that by acting this way, they've got them something they thought would make them happy. And then, can I treat this person with some compassion? Because whenever someone sets out to harm you, they're harming themselves more than you. Can I see that? Stepping back from my own mind. And then treat that person with some compassion. My goodness. Although my reactive mind felt it and so on, I can see now they're harming themselves more than they could ever harm me. Because I'm now back in touch with my peace. And just like the scripture says, when I'm in touch with that place inside of me that doesn't act and doesn't care about results, just is, then I have my peace. And I know that those reactive things that came up in my mind will slowly dissipate. And you can look at your own mind and things that happened in the past and see how when you felt harmed by someone else and then somehow got over it, eventually, unless you harbored a resentment and watered it, eventually you got over it and went into, went away. Unless you harbored a resentment and watered it, that's different. That's a long answer. Did that give you an answer to what you were asking?
Basically, yes, in good detail. Thank you.
I understand that answer, and I also try and do that. One of the things that I learned that has helped me a bit, sort of let go of that narrative
yes.
in my brain is to just feel it. Go to the direct experience in your body. Just feel the feeling, whatever it is, without, and then let the narrative go while you're feeling the feeling. Like literally focus on just what you're experiencing, feeling wise, and that can be really interesting if you let yourself do that, because sometimes it just sort of, I will feel it, I will be able to locate it in a part of my body,
yes,
which is really wild, and if I just allow it, it dissipates. And the other thing that will happen is I'll find my thoughts will be changing and be going off on another topic, another tangent. So it's just a way of going through that.
Yes. You might wonder which part of you gave yourself permission to get out of your mind, your head, and start looking at the feeling that you had and where it resides. This is the nonviolent practice that Sam likes to refer to. What part of you gave you permission, allowed you to put the narrative aside and look and say, what am I feeling? Where is that feeling?
I forget where I heard it, but I know it was someone who was a teacher. Probably someone I read or heard just said, just feel the feeling. And when I've done that, it's been really, really interesting because it helped me also understand what
the person had touched off in me.
Yes.
And how deep it was, and how it really had nothing to do with the situation then.
Right.
It was, they were touching something old.
Well, when you were a kid,
deep.
This happened, it came up again, who knows?
Yeah, but it was, but it had been holding my body, and it had never been allowed to just work itself out.
Flower, yes.
And if you can just feel it,
yes,
it can sort of finish the process and work itself
mm-hmm.
out, and then it's like I'm not walking around like a big wounded target.
No,
right?
It dissipates.
You know? Yeah.
There is a whole science called nonviolent communication of learning how to do that.
Yeah, well, I'm sure I tried it, and it's been really.
All right, well, you could go teach the nonviolent communication people
yeah, right.
what you, because that's what they're after, to be able to get a hold of those feelings. Sometimes those feelings are associated with an idea in the mind called a need. So there's a hook between the feeling and the need, which is up here, but actually the power and the energy is in the feeling. The mind, with its idea, I need this, is merely feeding the feeling. The feeling is the dog. The need is the tail.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the feeling that has the power.
Yeah.
How come you're not teaching this?
It can dissipate.
How come you're not teaching this?
I feel like I'm living in a world of connect the dots. And the dots are not all connected yet.
Well, what you just described is exactly the teachings that the Gita wishes to teach us and offer us some ways to get there. Now, the Gita is going to be talking to our minds to help us adjust our minds so that we can prepare ourselves to experience what you've experienced.
What I am discovering, and this is just for me, just saying where I am at this moment, is honestly, my mind is like a game of whack-a-mole. And I can't say that I trust it. It's
good
truth.
For you.
I really don't trust my mind.
It's just your mind.
It's just my mind.
It's just your mind.
It's a tool, and we've made it ourself. And it's not ourself. It's just a tool.
We're not our minds.
We're not our minds. And I really can feel that now and see it. And like I said, it's a game of whack-a-mole.
Whack-a-mole. I use my hand to pick this cup up, but I'm not my hand. I use my mind to figure out beautiful things in areas I like computer things and so on.
Yeah, it's a wonderful tool.
Great tool.
It's a great tool, but I'd like it to remain a tool.
Like Brother Francis said, St. Francis said, he said, I have this donkey. He was referring to our mind and our body. He said, I wash the donkey, I feed it, give it food, positive thoughts, give it a place to rest at night, but I ride the donkey doesn't ride me.
And it's you know, is the dog wagging the tail or the tail wagging the dog, you know.
It's such a beautiful sharing. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. That was very rich.
Well, we're all done now. I think we're after 11, so we probably ought to close. Anyway, and you told us all we need to know.
It's a beautiful illustration about feeling. Thank you.
Yeah. Good job. Well, for those who won't have the benefit of your presence next week, we'll have to carry on with a different way of getting to where you are going.
I'm just sharing a few of the dots.
Yeah.
That's all. I haven't
sure.
connected them.
No, that's all any teacher does.
That's right.
Okay.
you've been our teacher today. Inadvertently, perhaps.
Inadvertently, trust me.
Yes, the best kind. Thank you. Anything else to share before we close today?
There is an interesting book, and her name is Dr. Joan Rosenberg.
Rosenberg.
Mm-hmm. No relations with Marsha Rosenberg, just coincidence, but she talks about one choice, these 9 unpleasant feelings in 90 seconds. And just feeling the unpleasant feelings and just sitting with them. I'll send you the link. It's pretty interesting. She did a whole TED Talk video, wrote a book on it.
Well, I find sometimes the energy in my feelings is very, very strong. And I sometimes prefer to wallow in those feelings. Wallow, 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 wallow. And I haven't gotten to the point where I have the insight to step back from them and see where they're residing. Some reactive part of me just got going. And I wallow, 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 especially the negative feelings. Wallow, 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 wallow. Yeah. Even though I know it's probably not good for me, a part of me gets this reverse pleasure of wallowing in these negative scenarios. And sometimes, I'm ashamed to admit, I've taken some action from these negative feelings, which haven't served me very well. And yet, since most of the community I work with is a loving, compassionate community, taken into account who I am, accepted it, and allowed me to move on. Shall we close with our own? We'll take 3 conscious breaths. Yeah, the deep in breath. Shanti, shanti, shanti. May we go in peace.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks.
Well, I'm so glad something in you diverted you from your original plan and brought you over here today.
Spirit led you, yes.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
It was interesting because it was almost an example of what we were talking about in here. Because I could feel I was experiencing this very sort of an old, leaden feeling. And it just... It was not a good feeling. I could feel it, but I know it's old, and I know it's just a feeling.
A reactive feeling.
Yeah, reactive feeling. So I sort of went through in my head, what do I really have to do? And so I decided to untie that knot, actually. That's what I did. Because it was really, it was sending me out the door.
Right.
I
tried to escape in order to somehow preserve your happiness because at some time in your life, experiencing something negative, you felt unhappy. So you put a pattern someplace inside you that said, oh, something's offered, just got to go. Don't take any chances of being unhappy.
Yeah,
which is the reactive.
Right. But it was nice to be able to, I was able to feel the pause and realize it was an old feeling, and what am I really responding to? I'm responding to an old tape, an old feeling. It's irrelevant.
Well, it was a pleasant surprise when I saw you walking down the hall. I thought, what's she doing here?
I was going against the tide. It's really interesting.
Thank you. That's great.
Thank you. thank you.
We all teach, our, teach each other.
Yeah.
Very deep, thank you.